All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dylan Jamelli podcast. So I'm super pumped today for my guest. I have followed him. I relate to him on a lot of things, and he is well known and tremendous at what he does. He is a professional fitness coach. He's an entrepreneur. He does it all. My friends, this is Don Saladino.
Thank you. Thanks for the intro. Appreciate it, brother. It's great to be on here and love your background. I'm like a sneaker fanatic, so that's very cool, man.
That's a long time collection, man. So it's taking you a while to work at it. So I appreciate it. Thanks again for taking the time today. I want to get as much info out of you as I can. So we're going to rock and roll. Well, first, you're very well known in the fitness world. You've done some tremendous work. I really like a lot of the things that you talk about that you get into. I like your methodologies. But, you know, we all have a backstory. I'm curious, you know, how young were you and what motivated you to kind of go this route?
Wow. You know, when I get asked this question, I go all the way back to the second grade because I had a bad hearing problem. I had a stuttering problem at that age and was trying to find my lane. You know, at that time, it's like, God, schools back then, they would take, you know, kids who had issues and throw them into a class and, you know, hope that they figured it out and think that that wasn't a bad thing where they were, you know, getting their finger pointed at them and made fun of at that age. But like, you know, back at that time, you know, though I was looking at it as something that was terrible and ended up being a blessing. It was the best thing that could have happened to me because, you know, pushed me to become an athlete and went off to play, you know, college baseball and got really into working out at a young age. And, you know, I think it was because of that I realized that I could be physical and I could make up for my stutter, my hearing, and it was something that allowed me to feel significant. So I think it really comes down to, you know, that I found, you know, what was allowing me to feel significant at a young age. And that happened to be athletics and it happened to be, you know, exercise. And then I started, just like you probably did, was, you know, admiring certain, you know, figures on the covers of magazines that now today I'll be friends with. And, you know, college, I went off to play Division I college baseball, had a great 4-year career there. But throughout my college career, was so immersed in training and nutrition and supplementation that my college coach even told me at one point, like, do what you want for your workouts. I don't even care. Like, you know, and it was back then. I'm looking at it now. I'm like, no, I should have been doing what the team was doing. But, you know, he just kind of told me, he's like, the guys don't want to work out with you. You're a lunatic. So kind of, you know, live in your own world. But I think that's where it started for me. And then finding when I graduated college, finding my lane and finding, you know, where my profession's going to be, you know, becoming a coach back in 1999. I wasn't thinking about, you know, how am I going to make a career? You know, how am I going to be able to support a family one day? I'm really lucky. My approach was trying to become the best coach out there and getting as educated as possible. And, you know, I'm flying all over the country, taking as many courses as possible. Remember, there was no online courses. There was no webinars. There's none of this stuff existed. So there was no social media. Literally, you'd hear about a course, you'd be on a plane, you'd be in California, you'd be in Texas, you'd be in Florida, you went wherever you could go to take a mentorship program and a coaching program. On top of that, every year I would always hire some form of a training coach. And when I say that, it was like, all right, what do I want to get exceptional at? Let me find the best kettlebell person. Let me find the best Olympic lifter. Like, who's the best bodybuilding coach? Who's the best sports performance person? And it was always nutrition-wise. You know, I got into, you know, assessing bloods back when I was 16, 17 years old. Nice. I was going to Dr. Gary Wadler, and who was on the congressional hearing for the whole baseball steroid scandal. And he was the one looking at my bloods at a very young age. He was at my wedding when I got married, right? This was, you know, so many years ago, but I was definitely ahead of my time in that sense. And nutritionally, I can list dozens of incredible nutrition coaches, functional medicine doctors that I've worked with throughout the years. But, you know, I think that was kind of my school. And now, you know, proud to say I've been a coach for roughly 26 years. I probably trained over 40,000 one-hour sessions in my life. I no longer take on one-on-one clients. I mean, I've got a great online community. It's much more of a scalable business now. So I sell programs in 80 countries. I host challenges. The last 3-4 years, I've rented an island off the coast of Mexico, and I I host my retreat. So like we've really built up a great business. We've got a great team working for us here at the barn. This is my facility that I built in 2021. And I just let my friends come in here, and it's a place where we shoot content and do work.
That's amazing. And you started so early coaching. I can't imagine you would have ever dreamed or thought of like where it would have gone for you to do like, you know, everything. Just, I remember, because I was 18 when you, or I was 17 when you started like becoming a trainer. So I remember just like the new gyms and like Hammer Strength just came here, for example, and where it's gone to, what you're able to do now with online and everything. I mean, I can't imagine what that's been like for you going through the evolution.
Fascinating. And that's why, like, even when I occasionally give some business talks to coaches, and you know, this stuff didn't exist back then, right? It's like there was no, like, we're doing Riverside right now, right? This is this is an online, like, this didn't, like, if you explain this to someone back then, it didn't exist. The web back then was an Ethernet cable that you plugged into the wall. You used to hear that loud dial tone. The web was this black hole of secrets. No one really knew what it was. It was, you know, this is a long time ago. There was no, you know, online webinars, retreats. There was no paid spend. There was no social media. And that's why I always explain to people, like, I'm a believer in going after what you're really passionate about. And if you are lucky and you go after what you're passionate about, you can turn this into a very lucrative career. It's something that, you know, you are, you know, excited to do every day. And I'm as passionate about what I do now as I've ever been in my life. And I try to continually educate myself as much as possible. Like, I'm talking to an energy systems coach today at like 5:30, right? And it's just to be able to dial things in. So I've just been this student throughout the years when it comes to nutrition, recovery, and training. And, you know, it's great to be able to pass that knowledge, you know, along to people now who, you know, they can get access to so much now that in such a quicker fashion. So, back then you had to get on a plane. Now you can, you know, download a program or download an ebook or whatever it is, and you can learn a lot from some good people.
Yeah, there was no YouTube content, no audio listening, no nooks, no none of that. It was, you get a nice big fat textbook or go sit and paper a class, like you said. So,
oh my God. Yeah, I started working on my master's degree at one point, and I actually discontinued it because I had an opportunity. I got funded to open my first gym back in 2005. So, you know, these are, you know, sometimes you just kind of jump on it, right? It's just, there's never a perfect time. It's just like, well, now's the right time, and I may not get this opportunity again. It was a good move for me.
So, well, and I never talked to you about you playing college baseball. So it's kind of similar. I can't believe how much I relate to you, because I played college basketball, and then that's how I got into the, you know, more fitness. And I started studying blood panels and everything because of the baseball steroid era. And that's how I started like researching PEDs and everything that I was doing videos on, you know, beforehand and all of that. And that's what fascinated me. So it's wild how similar, because I didn't know, you know, the route. So let's go back to your college. So, Where did you go to school, and what did you major in when you were?
Yeah, well, I went to a school called Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Connecticut, and I majored in business. So, well, back then there was no degree in exercise science or exercise phys, or the stuff didn't exist, and I didn't even think twice about it. I was, you know, I came from a catering background. My family, you know, we did weddings, sweet 16s, and bar mitzvahs. So I started working at, the first day they ever put me, you know, to work was 7, but I think consistently, I started working at about 12, which is when I was regularly working and sweeping maintenance, doing all this stuff. And then by the time I was 14, 15, I was working overnight with my father, and we were going in at 10 a.m. and on a weekend and not leaving until 3 a.m. the next day. And, you know, we're first kosher and non-kosher caterers on Long Island.
Wow.
My grandfather opened this business in 1973. So I understood people. I understood diffusing situations. And I understood that, you know, you can go to work one night and there might be 5 parties going on and there's going to be problems. And, you know, I saw guns pulled on my dad. I saw knives pulled on my dad. I've walked into some pretty crazy stuff with banquet staffs, orgies going on, people leaving. No, seriously, people leaving, you know, their party during the day with another woman and then coming back at night, sitting at the exact, or what they thought was the exact same table in the exact same room. It could have been, I'm going to make this name up, it could have been the O'Reilly wedding during the day, and at night it was like the Fino, you know, wedding, and each someone, they would sit down and eat someone else's meal, and I'd be like, oh my God, we recognize you from today. What are you doing? Like, there were some craziest stories in this place that I've ever seen. It was bananas, but it was fun. And looking back on it now, I'd say that was, for me, that was a form of school. Just, you know, I was the minority at work, one of the very few white people at work, you know, just being around that type of grit and that type of, you know, the people I was around really were working. They were, this was like paycheck to paycheck. So I think being around that allowed me to really respect the dollar and respect people and understand service and understand when you're working a party sometimes and someone's not paying the bill, you know, you're going to be treated a certain way and they're going to have too much to drink. And how are you going to handle that? So I really think at a young age, if you look, if you ask me now, what was some of the best education I ever had in my life? I'm putting that in the top three category for me. And that was something even now, my son at a young age, I've got him working at the exact same place
I
worked at. My daughter's working at the exact, because I understood how, you know, the service business, it's my opinion. Someone might bark at me for saying this. I feel like every human being should work in service at some point. I think everyone should be working in the service business. They should understand what it's like to deal with people and, you know, see that it's not always roses.
No. And I totally agree with you. I started bartending at 18 and I
did. Yeah. Wow.
Situations that I lied about my age to get the job because here you had to be 21. And I agree with you because it's good to, first of all, it's good to see what it's like to wait on people and to serve other people and what it's like. And then maybe being a better understanding how to treat people, you know, because you've been there.
Yep.
And it does develop grit and personality. So I totally agree with you. So when I was in school, and I want to compare this to you, because I was in college in 2000 to, you know, on, and they started doing more exercise sciences, physiology. So I started taking nutrition, physiology, kinesiology, and then I decided, you know, I can get all these certifications, so I better get the business because I'm going to run a business regardless of what I do. So I did NASM. And back then it was like ACE, NASM, and a couple, and that was it. Is that kind of the route you went, or what did you do for your...
Yeah, well, for my when I graduated college, I think the first certification I might have gotten was East Coast Fitness Training Institute, which doesn't exist anymore. Ironically, it was incredible because it was actually a 6-month training course.
Wow.
That I had to go to class for. And really? It was the only one I've ever seen that was like that was non like accredited. You know, it wasn't being offered in school. So to have to go take this course, and even looking back on what I learned now, and I remember some stuff, it was good information, right? It was solid. And then after that, you know, yeah, I took ACE, I took NASM, like I took all that stuff. I still think I maintained my NASM. And then I took a couple of kind of mentorship programs. And then I went through all my kettlebell training, my RKC, my SFG, my SFG2, my TPI. I was the first one to go through all three levels, so Titleist Performance Institute, did all my FMSs, did, you know, all my kid stretch courses. My functional range conditioning courses. I mean, I go on pre and postnatal courses. I've had taken dozens and dozens and dozens of courses. And, you know, I don't know what I maintain now, probably 3 to 5 of them I maintain, if they even have to maintain them. But I don't think the certification is not, that's not really where the magic is. I think any coach turning around should hold a national certification. You should have insurance. You should have a CPR. These are things that you need to have. But I think the continuing ed piece for me, when I was hiring, when I owned my first club that I had, 495 Broadway, I had for 15 years from 2005 to 2020, was one of my two. I was less concerned about the certifications and more concerned with the continuing ed. So if someone told me they went and they worked for like Eric Cressy or Mike Boyle and they did an internship there, or, you know, and then they started mentioning certs that they had that weren't really nationally accredited, but it showed me their mindset was in a good place out of nowhere. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, this tells me a lot. Like, when someone would come into a to me with a survey, like, I'm at ASM. Like, I never really, not to knock it, but it didn't really tell me anything. But if someone's like, yeah, I took my SFG and my RKC and my FMS, I'm like, oh, wow. So this person understands the importance of a functional movement screening. That's a good place to be. I'm not saying they're a great coach, this person understands, you know, hard style training and the kettlebell and tension techniques. Great place to be. This person went off and took Mike Boyle certification. Phenomenal place to be. Like, it shows me that their mindset is off in a good place. And they're not these big name certifications where most people are like Googling and going to. You're almost like, oh, wow, this person knows what they're doing if they want to go take that.
Yeah.
Right. So that's really kind of more of the things that I looked at when I had my clubs in the city.
I'm with you 100%. It just shows initiative, like you're digging deeper and looking.
Yeah. 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 That's exactly it.
I agree 100%. Now, I don't think, and I think you'll attest to this, I don't think people understand what it takes in terms of what you do to constantly be studying so many different things that change. I mean, we could just sit here and rap about the diet changes and things that we've seen change from the year 2000 and now, and we could talk for like 6 months. You know, like,
yeah, you and some.
I mean, we'll go from low fat to low carb to this to that to this to that. And I know for myself, I always go to bed 3-4 hours after my wife. Most nights I'm reading, studying, listening, learning several nights a week just because I can't do it during the day.
Yeah, so you don't have enough time.
What's your upkeep? Like, how constant are you in reading and learning and studying? And
every day, every day. Yeah. Like I said, it might not even be today. Maybe it's not a book, but today maybe it's a call where I'm going to spend an hour on a call with someone picking their brain. This morning, I was on the phone with one of my best friends, Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, and we're always, you know, I was actually talking to her about some training stuff. She was asking me the questions this time. I normally ask her the questions. So, yeah, this is something that it's an evolution, but that's why most people are so confused, right? That's why, like, there's not this one book in the store where you're just like, here, take this and do it and
yeah,
have a healthy life. Like, good luck, right? This is why people start things and then it starts working. They're like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. And then months later, they're like, oh, I'm not getting the same response. They start a new diet. They feel amazing. They're like, I feel incredible. And out of nowhere, they're not receiving the same, you know, response from that. And I think that's why, you know, what people need to understand is that the body's always changing. Seasons change. Stress levels.
Thank you.
You're not, I mean, I'm always trying to find a way to be optimal. Right. And I'm always trying to find a way to do better and feel better. And it's been, I can't tell you, I don't know if I know anyone on the planet that's committed to more programs than I have. I'll go do blood work. I'll go, you know, I'll test things 6 months later. Like this is like what I love to do. So for me, it's fun, but out there for most people, you know, if they're listening, they're like, well, I'm not a coach. It's like, all right, well, find someone that's good, you know, find someone that's actually coached, you know, and, you know, who has some experience on the floor, because a good coach is going to have the education, but they're also going to know how to navigate things. And what I tell everyone, and you know this better than anyone, this is all like a big giant puzzle. Like, where you're being handed your puzzle, and your puzzle is going to look different than my puzzle. And, you know, we could have the same goals, but it's going to be a different puzzle to get there. It's just how it works.
And you know, the classic questions that I'm sure you get, what do I got to do to look like you? What do I got to do to lose weight? And it's just,
yeah,
it's the worst question ever. I don't mean to
be. No, it's not. It's not a bad question because it's what people know to ask. It's like, yeah. I think a lot of the people out there who are like highly educated in this, and they're like, oh, well, it depends. Like, yeah, it's I can understand how certain people, as a coach, you can't get annoyed at that question.
No, it's not that I get annoyed. It's that I want to stress, because I think my annoyance is not with the person asking the question. It's with the people that put it into their heads that it's like a one-trick pony answer. Because,
oh, yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
They sell that idea and that concept, and it pisses me off because it's just not accurate. It's what you just said is what I agree with, is that every single person is different, and it's an ongoing change as you age and as your body adapts to certain things. And I think that if more people like yourself and myself got that word out and didn't sell this, you know, because people try to do scammy things or sell this thing that just doesn't exist. And it's constant. It takes a lot of dedication and it takes a lot of effort to analyze and understand the data, right? And
yeah,
that's when you come in, or I come in, or a coach comes in. That's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you got to recognize between the coach and the influencer, right? Like,
yeah.
And yes, a coach is giving influence, right? Like we are influencing people. Like, I understand that, but I think it's very obvious when you look at someone online and they're like, this is what I eat every day to get ripped.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, like, fantastic. Like, that's, that's great. That works for you. And that's awesome. And that might be the worst thing for someone else to do. So that's also why if you go through my social media or you go through any of my content, I'm never saying like, this is the best thing. I might say like, hey, you want to take a look at my morning routine? This is what I do.
Yeah.
Or like I put up a post today on three supplements, right? And what were the three supplements? The first one I said was protein. Well, hold on. That's not a supplement. It's a macronutrient, but you may need a supplement if you're not getting enough. The right. next I said was creatine, which we all know the benefits of that. And then I was like, then I'm throwing a wild card in there because I'm almost like, you know, do we all need fish oil? Maybe not. Do we all need vitamin D? Like, well, I'm sorry, we need it, but we may have enough of this in our, we may have enough of this in our body to where we don't need to supplement it. So I threw out a urolithin A supplement that I've been playing around with, and it was genuine. And I have noticed, you know, a lot of return on my skin and certain things. I'll be 48 in April. So like I have been noticing certain things and I'm like, yeah, I'm big on this right now. That's me being honest. It's not a push. But again, I always get very nervous with coaches when they're like, this is what you have to do. Because a good coach is going to know that, you know, it's not always about, I never turn to anyone and I'm like, here's my A plan.
Right.
I find out like, where are you? And then it's like, with most people, it's minimalistic approach. When I have an actor who's got to get ready and they're like, I've got 4 weeks. I'm like, you're mine. Like, you've got 4 weeks and we have to do what? You're mine. Like, this is it. Like, there's no compromise here. This is you giving me feedback and me making adjustments and us getting you there because this is your livelihood and you have no choice. And guess what? I hate doing it. I hate short term. I hate short term. Like we have 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I like long term investments. I want to turn around and I want to help educate someone. And I want every year for them to turn around and say, I keep learning from this guy. I keep improving my health, my body composition, everything keeps improving. God, there's no way I could have done this all on day one. He had to rewire the way I approach these things. And that's what I enjoy doing more.
I'm with you. I'm a big long-term thinker, long-term, you know, process. It's a marathon, not a sprint type of guy. But I also
100%
know that, you know, you're going to get people that need that. But I'm totally with you. Let's go back to the three supplements that you listed. Now, I do mention, I am actually going to interview. I'm real big on the urolithin A. And that's what I want your opinion. I've been talking with the people at MightAppear who do the urolithin A, and I'm actually interviewing one of the scientists there. So, because I'm fascinated. I'm absolutely
fascinated. Who are you speaking to over there?
Jen is who
I'm. Oh, yeah. Jen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Jen's great. Yeah.
Her in about 2 or 3 hours too. I got a call with her, but her and Ian, Ian's
great. Tell them I was on your podcast. I was just on with them and phenomenal people. Again, it's one of those, this is the thing about supplementing and the thing about some of these newer products coming out is you're going to have a science backed coach.
Yes.
Immediately turn around and say, well, there's no evidence. Like, or there is evidence, but the research is inconclusive. Or, you know, I know Timeline keeps developing and they keep bringing more and more research to the table. I think a good coach, if there's no question mark on, like, if this is a product that had a question mark on health, like, I'm not messing with it.
Me either.
Like, if there was any arrow pointing in the direction that this could be risky, I am not messing with it. But a lot of these science-backed, you know, coaches or whatever they want to refer to them as, scientists, biohackers, whatever it is, I don't care, to each his own, call you, whatever you feel is right, they also have to form their own hypothesis and they have to go out there and I think they have to put things to the test. And I think this is what a lot of these people are missing. They want to regurgitate what they're reading online constantly. Mm-hmm. When I have been doing this 26 years and I cannot tell you the amount of highly respected coaches that have turned around 10 years later and contradicted themselves. And I'm like, well, wait a second, you said this 10 years ago. And they were like, change my mind. Right. Or the research pointing in a different direction. And I actually committed to something and I saw. But it's very easy for someone to say, well, how do you know it was urolithin A where your skin got better? Dude, I'm so dialed in with what I put into my body. I'm so dialed in with my bedtime. This is the way that I love to live. That when you start taking something and you begin to notice a difference and then get off of it and then take a long time off and then get back on it and see it again, you start forming your own assumption that, like, all right, like, there may be something there. So I think that's another thing. That's another thing a lot of these coaches need to start doing is, like, stop regurgitating what is being, well, this scientist or Stanford has, you know, came to this conclusion, because we've seen this stuff is wrong. I think that information could be a segue for us to now to begin to experiment. And then I'm really interested in that coach who's been in the industry for a long time, who's like, yeah, I have been doing this for a while. I started taking creatine monohydrate 30 years ago. I was, what's the math? 16 to 17 years old. It was longer than 30. Yeah, the math would be longer than that.
Yeah.
And I remember I had Dr. Wadler at the time was being like, get off creatine. It's not good for your liver.
Yes.
Okay, remember this? Your liver enzymes were high. You know why my liver enzymes were high? Because I was drinking with creatine. When right. I say I was drinking, at the time, I was binge drinking maybe one night a week or one night every 2 weeks, and my liver enzymes were high. You know what I did at one point? You know how I figured this out? I stopped drinking. I lied to him. I told him I got off creatine. And he came back. He goes, I told you it was the creatine. I go, why? He's like, your liver enzyme count is completely in a very healthy place now. I never got off creatine.
Right.
So it had nothing to do with that. He was so set in his ways that at a young age, I was like, I'm not stopping this supplement. Like, everything I'm reading on, it's amazing. And it's not even, you know how much more we found out since then? I was like, it's fine. I'll never forget reading the line. Well, it's in the amount of creatine you're getting from 5 grams is what you would get in like 5 pounds of raw uncooked meat. And I'm like, well, how can that be bad? I'm 16, 17 saying that, right? But you know what? I'm at that age, probably naive, because it could have been bad. We don't know. But it ended up being probably one of the most highly recommended supplements in the world right now. Everyone now suddenly like, your grandparents should be taking it. Oh, your 15, 16-year-old kid. There's cognitive function. There's cognitive benefit to this and all this stuff. So, you know, again, you've got to, you know, take this stuff and form your own opinion by committing to, you know, a process. Never jump into anything that's dangerous, of course. And that's also a reason why, like, I've never experimented with any type of performance enhancing substance. Never in my life. Like, just not my why. My blood works have always been phenomenal. My energy level has always been great. I've always held a good amount of muscle. So people are like, well, why? What's wrong with it? I'm like, I don't need. Why would I mess with something that I don't need? That's not to devalue my friend who was in Afghanistan that was literally blown up, had his jaw blown off his face, his nose blown off his face, his arm blown off his body. Jason Redmond, good friend of mine. And he had to get on stuff and he's very public about it now. So I know there is a time and a place for certain people that need to go down this route. But I also think that's become the Wild West where this is a big cash grab for a lot of doctors. And you better be careful because, again, we have not, what are the words I'm looking for here? We have not spent enough time with these things to understand the long-term ramifications from it.
Agreed. I spent, I told you this before, when I started YouTube videos, it was more on the steroid education and that type of eating. And that was my background. And I was more really trying to get people to not do them really and explain all of the problems. But then if you're going to, here's how to do it properly. But, you know, I have come to the conclusion, well, first of all, my years of using it were small. And I told my wife, I said, well, I don't even, you know, I've done this, I've experienced it for my content, but there's no point or avenue here aside from shortening my lifespan. And so what I always tell people is this, and I'll see what you think about this, and we can talk about supplements, not really steroids, but I always tell people I think that in conclusion, when you're looking at results for you and I or whoever, I would put diet almost 70 to 75%, training 20-25%, and supplements or steroid or performance enhancing, maybe 5%, maybe, but it really around diet and training.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but I do know that, you know, what is going to really trump nutrition and rest and training, and those are the things. You remember the last couple of years, everyone's like, I try to do something hard every day, right? Like everyone's like, I want to do something difficult. I'm looking at half these people and they're like, wow, they all want to do something difficult, but none of these people I've seen, not all of them, most of them, they've got like 20 to 25% body fat. Like they're out of shape and they're all like, do something difficult today. I'm like, do something difficult. That's waking up, you know, and having to go through that morning routine that you have. And I don't mean meditation. I'm not talking about that. I don't meditate, right? I'm not going to meditate if I'm taking a cold plunge or I'll call it meditation. I'm just sitting there trying to breathe and count slow and relax. That's, you know, but I think the hard things are having that discipline to be consistent. I think that's where this becomes a challenge for most people.
You took the word right out of my mouth. I was going to say the difficult thing every day is consistency, because anybody can get there. But once you get there, then what do you do with it? Right. And that's the hard part. Diet is the hardest thing to stay consistent with. I think training's far easier to stay consistent with than diet.
I think training's so easy and I think training's fun. And I think that it's like discipline over motivation, like just show up and do something type of thing. And every time I do a new training program, it's like I'm doing a new project, right? It's like fun. It's like I'm building something or I'm driving a new car or going on a vacation. It's like I literally look at a new program when I'm committing to something or a new block of training. I'm going to every session like I'm thinking about the night before. Like it sounds, people are going to be like, get a life. No, I have a great life. I have two amazing children. I have a beautiful wife who's my business partner. We got a successful business. We have a happy home. I love what I do. I love the fact that I'm disciplined and I like to put my time into these sort of things. That's what makes me happy. Do I go and have pizza? Yeah, I had one last night with my son and my wife. We sat around the table eating it. Like, do I once in a blue moon, do I ever have a beer? Sure. I know the next time I'll probably have one is when I'm on the slopes snowboarding with my family in March. Like, do I have a lot? No, I don't. Like, it just doesn't make me feel good. But there's times I do let my hair down and do those things. And that's what allows me to really enjoy my life because I never abuse it. I always feel good. And that's how I like to approach it, right? Do you remember this guy? This guy, Brian Johnson, right now, this like biohacker, this like he's out of his, I watched. So my son the other night wanted to watch his documentary and I watched it. And I was fascinated on how many people were like, excuse my language, shitting on him.
Yeah.
Like these women on The View jumped on and they were like, oh my God, like live a little, get a life. And I was like, I actually felt terrible for him. I'm like, this actually seems happy and he seems, you know, and he's not like, do I think he's a little kooky? Sure. Do I think his lifestyle is a little unusual for most? Yes. Can I relate to him? Because he is just, you know, and then you had other doctors going on being like, this isn't science. Fine. He is still trying to push the envelope in his own life. He has the money and the resources to do this sort of thing. So he's going for it. So I actually had this newfound respect for the guy when I finished the documentary, because I was like, I don't care his personal life, that stuff, whatever. But like how he's approaching something he's passionate with and the amount of discipline and the monotony. And it's like when I watch a bodybuilder on stage, most people would say, oh, steroids, like bullshit. Get on steroids. You ain't going to look like that person on stage. It ain't happening. When I'm at the Olympia watching these competitors, I've never had the urge to compete, but I admire them for the amount of discipline and the amount of years and hard work. Contest prep is one of the most miserable. I've gone through it and I haven't competed. It's one of the most, as you know, miserable, disgusting things you can ever do. Talk about feeling terrible. Talk about boring. Imagine for, you know, 8, 10, 12, 16 weeks eating the exact same foods at the exact same times over and over. People would go crazy. They can't do that. People can't even get, you know, one healthy meal a day, let alone do with these bodies. So when I look at them, there's almost this respect that I find for these people who have to put in this hard work, like this guy, Brian. Do I think he's going to live longer than most? Who knows? Life is weird sometimes. But am I looking at the process of what he's going through? And do I think he might open the eyes for people to think a little bit differently? Maybe. And if people are getting healthier, then, you know, then good for him.
I agree. And to touch on what you say, you know, the best parts of my day are one, first thing in the morning, I get up and go walk. I'm a spiritual guy, so I do my prayers, but I walk.
Sure.
Take degrees, just walk 25, 30 minutes. That just starts my day. And then the next best times of my day are when I'm training, because you feel good, you feel free, and you're pushing yourself and you're learning about yourself and what to do and what not to do. And then you can help others too. And it's amazing. But I'm with you too. Look, I think that Brian's a little kooky too, but he's really trying to learn different things that could possibly help others expand their lifespan. And maybe it is nuts. Maybe it's not. But I mean, let's learn from it and kind of put it together and utilize that as knowledge. I think if anything else, I mean,
think about how many people started on trajectories where others were like, oh, he's crazy. And or she's crazy. And then, you know, then they find something out and they're like, genius. I'm like, give the guy a break. But I was more turned off by how critical people were of him. And it's just, you know, you should be able, what they should be saying was like, listen, if this is what makes this person happy, fantastic. It's about go live a little. Maybe he's living, you know what? The amount of joy it sounds like he's getting out of, you know, slowing down his aging process, if he even is, listen, if he's happy, knock yourself out, buddy.
Like you just said, the people that pushed the envelopes that were thought to be crazy are the ones that figured everything out that we have now. Yeah. I mean, falling in line is never going to get you anywhere. It's just not.
I know.
I can't show you that concept, but you know, hey, everybody's going to live different and people are going to have their opinions and that's fine. I try to stay away from the negativity as much as I can. And I try to learn. You know, I always say you can never know too much, but you can always know too little. So I take people like you, people I respect, and I try to give what I can, but I also know that the only way to advance is to take time to learn from everybody.
You have to. I mean, I can't believe the amount of knowledge out there now and the amount of access we have is extraordinary. You know, on the other hand, there's so much of it that, you know, confuses the living hell out of people. So I can understand why a lot of people are confused, but yeah, the access that we have now, the fact that you can turn around and if you forget something or you have to look up, you know, I can't tell you the amount of times, like, I love watching documentaries and I'll literally sit there with my phone next to me and I'm like, oh, this person's still alive. Google. Boom. Wow. How many teams do they play on? Google. Wow. And it's like, it's just like encyclopedia that you have next to you. God, we didn't have that 30 years ago. It's like, it's amazing.
So I want to get some of your diet thoughts, some of your nutrition beliefs. And like we were talking, things are subjective to the individual.
Yeah.
Some people do better with lower high carb, lower high fat, etc. But do you have a belief in your mind, like where you focused, you shift more towards like more protein intake? Like what's your thoughts on carbs and everything?
Sure.
So
I think most, not all, most should lean to more of a high protein and let's just say abundant carbohydrate fat diet. Like I do believe in metabolic flexibility. I do believe that, you know, we all need, roughly that gram of protein per pound of body weight. I'm not saying we need this to survive. Like you can go way lower than that, right, to survive. But I'm talking about all of us out there. Most of us listening to this, we train, we're hard on our bodies. And I also know that if you're consuming a gram of protein per pound of body weight, you know, how much of that is from animal, you know, is that animal protein? And then how much is that from collagen or how much of that is from nuts or seeds or whatever? You know, so most people out there, when they think they're getting, you know, a gram per pound of body weight, they're actually probably getting less of that animal protein. So, I do believe I've always been, I'm someone that's always been very lean for a very, you know, for a long period of time. And, you know, every cover, I've been on probably a dozen covers. I've been on, I think, four since 2018. I've been on Muscle and Fitness three times, Men's Health once. And every single cover I've gotten ready for, I've had 4 to 5 weeks to get ready, and which isn't a lot of time. So, you know, how can I go around all the time being lean, being in single-digit body fat, but keeping my energy level high? I'm an athlete. I play ice hockey. Right now, I play three days a week. I play Tuesdays, Fridays, and Saturday mornings early. Nice. So I like to skate. I like to play, but you're out there burning and I need fuel. So like, how is it that I'm able to stay lean by consuming higher carbohydrates? It's also because one, the carbs I consume are good carbs. They're fibrous carbs. I think fiber is something that we overlook a lot and where everyone's just looking more towards macronutrients. I always say the fourth macronutrient is fiber. And I think that's something that we should all look at. But I also know that if you're someone that is, oh, every time I have carbohydrates, I gain weight, right? Which is a very common thing for people to hear, you know? What's the science on? For every gram of carbs you're pulling in, you're probably drawing in, 2 to 3 grams of water, roughly, right? So it's normal that if you go on a low-carbohydrate diet, you're going to dehydrate your muscle of water, and then you're going to go out and have a couple of margaritas or have a couple of tacos or whatever it is. Your body the next day is like, oh my God, I just gained 5 of the 8 pounds back. Why am I doing this? And you know, I also believe that these things need to be built in time. So a lot of times when I'm working with someone who has, consuming a low-calorie diet. They've been in a deficit too long. And we've set a path that we're going to try and get their calories up. I will take weeks, if not months, to do so, right? So if you're going to a macro tracking app like Chronometer, there's a new one out right now that I really like called Carbon. I have no affiliation with them. I'm just giving my 2 cents. But a lot of these macro tracking apps, what it will do is it'll ask you, you know, your age, your height, your weight, and your activity level. Are you sedentary? Are you lightly active? Are you moderately active? And based off of that, it'll use whatever. I know Chronometer uses like a Mifflin equation, and it'll use an algorithm that will get you, you know, into a good range of probably where you need to be for your maintenance calories. And I'm saying that's just, you know, without saying that we want to be in a surplus or deficit. So let's say someone comes to me and they're at 1,200 calories a day, but they go to Chronometer and Chronometer is telling them 2,200 calories a day. Like, the biggest mistake people make is that, like, the next day when they, after they get this information, they're like trying to hit 2,200 calories and they end up getting to like 1,600 and they feel sick and they feel bloated. They might be able to maintain this for a few days. And then they get on the scale. They're like, I can't do this. I just gained 5 pounds. I'm done. Where, like, what they should have done is maybe take an incredibly conservative approach. And I might do, this is really conservative, but if I have to raise someone 1,000 calories, I might do that in 10 weeks.
Yeah.
And I might just take 100 calories a week and I might just bump it, which is so easy to do. Oh my God. Like, you could do, you know, what's the math on that? I mean, 25 grams of protein, that's 100 calories right there.
Yeah.
Like, you're done. So think about that. You could slowly start bumping up your macronutrients and you could slowly start reverse dieting into a process. And what I have found, and this is my testing, this is me putting this out to tens of thousands of people online, for it's very scalable, is that if they commit to the process and they are resting and hydrating and they focus, you know, I've had women in this group go from 1400 calories to 3200 calories and lose 30 pounds, you know, because now their energy levels increase, their sleep quality is increasing, and all these good things happen. It's taken them 2 years to do that. Like, let's be very clear. So I think that's part of the problem with most people is that they jump into these things thinking it's going to be this automatic body composition change. And when I say body composition change, that doesn't always mean weight loss. You could change body composition. You could burn body fat without losing weight. Like, we've seen it. Like,
yeah,
of course, yeah, well, no problem, right? You could put on weight and not increase body fat. Of course you can. Like, these are hard things to do, right? But they are possible. So I just think it's this level of patience and it's this lack of education. And it's people always listening to you. Well, you have to be in a deficit to lose weight. Like, well, what happens to the person that's consuming 1,000 calories a day and starving themselves and then every once in a while binge eating? Like, I'm going to try and bump their calories. I'm going to try and keep them more satiated, right? I'm going to develop their muscle building block. I'm going to increase their fiber. And I'm going to, over time, watch a body composition change. And we'll do this over a long period of time to where through the coaching process, how are you feeling? Energy levels increasing. Great. How's your sleep? Sleeping better than I ever have. Wow. I weighed myself. I haven't lost weight. Keep going. Like, let's just keep going. And you understand what happens at that point. But it's difficult for most people to trust the process.
It's hard. I'll tell you this. It's hard for everybody, even a coach. I mean, I've battled like an eating disorder dysmorphia for my whole, basically, since I was 11. That's when I started studying nutrition because of the issues I had. And, you know, even what I coach, which falls in line pretty close to what you are. I have a little, I like a little lower carb, but not eliminate the carb, right? But
sure.
Similar. And just so you can have some data on me, I have done this, just destroyed myself with the amount of training and the under eating. And I'm talking 1,700 calories a day when I'm burning like 35 to 4,000 with the work.
Tough.
And super low fat when I know how important fat is, like no fat, just peanut butter. So recently, I finally got to the point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. I just can't take it. And I went from like 1,700 calories to 2,700, and I increased my fats from like 15 to 100.
Wow.
And I have gotten more cut and more shredded than since I was taking PEDs.
It's amazing. And
I went from feeling like maybe a 30 every day to like 100, you know, every day. Energy, attitude, fully everything. And I, so basically I'm doing like a 45 fat, 35, or I mean 45 protein, 35 fat, maybe 15 carb, maybe 20. And maybe I'm going to try to work on increasing the carbs. But my point is what you said, you can kill your metabolism and ruin yourself by under eating. You're not going to lose weight. And if you do, it's going to look bad. And I was just miserable. And doing this, I didn't eat ground beef for like 15 years. Dude, I'm having half a pound every day of ground bison or venison. I'm so happy. And like, I just can't, you know, it's amazing.
So I'm so happy for you. And it's like, to be able to make that type of drastic change and to reap the benefits and feel that way is really a special thing. I was just fortunate enough to, you know, when I got into nutrition, every time I learned something, I'd be like, oh, this is like what I have to do. And it was funny because I think back to when I really started lifting weights at like 15, 16, I remember my buddy of mine looking, being like, after a workout one night, he said, we got to get some protein now. And I'm like, what's that? And he's like, you know, it's in like chicken and meat. And like, well, okay, where do you want to go? He's like, let's go to Doremos. Doremos is a pizzeria in my town. He's like, we're going to get meatballs and pasta. I said, great. So we go eat meatballs and pasta. And then like, out of nowhere, you know, you're hearing that to get super shredded, like, is white pasta the best thing? Maybe not. Okay. Now we're going to start eating egg whites. We're eating egg whites. Well, now we're going to start eating whole eggs. And you start eating whole eggs as you understand the importance of the fat and the amino acid, et cetera, et cetera. But every time I would hear something that I needed to do, I was like, oh, I'll do it. The one thing I never, like, have I ever done a ketogenic diet? I did it for, I think I got into ketosis for like 3 months, purposely, not because I was like, this is what I want to do. I'm like, I have to do this. Like, everyone's, too many people are asking me questions. Have I ever done intermittent fasting? Yes, I have. I've done it probably for the same amount of time because I had to answer questions. Did I ever experiment with going raw vegan? I did it for about a week. And then I was like, the hell with this. This is something, and there's no way and even that was absolutely miserable. Raw vegan. Like, you know how hard that is? I read this book by this guy, Back Brace. And I was just like, all right, I'm going to try. And I was like, and I can't believe I even made it a week. It was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. I hated it. But yeah, have I tried being a vegetarian? Sure. Have I tried Yeah, I would, but it wasn't because I was like, oh, this is the healthy thing to do. It was always because I was like, I need to understand what this is like, and I have to do this by trial and error.
Right.
The entire time knowing and understanding that the way that I eat now is the way that I always should be eating. Like, I kind of always knew that. But I think where my diet has evolved throughout the years is understanding about rotating different foods in seasonally and getting different shades in. And, you know, if I am on the road eating and there's access to different types of foods that I don't have access to, jump into that, right? There's just, you know, understanding the importance of fiber, right? Like, when you're younger, you're just eating like brown rice and chicken and broccoli. Like, is that food really nutrient dense and really powerful? No. But all in all, like, even looking back on the last 20, 25 years, pretty damn good. It's not like I went from, you know, being a vegetarian and doing that for a couple of years because I watched some documentary. And then, you know, what they don't tell you is a few years in, how many of those people converted back to eating, like you said, now you eat red meat. Why? Because your body feels good from it. It's not bad for you. But yes, if you're eating McDonald's, sure, like, it's a crappy quality of meat with all this other crap in it that your body doesn't need. So, you know, I think sometimes they generalize it too much. What was that terrible documentary out? Game Changers. Remember that? So this is my thing on that, right? And I don't even know why I'm bringing this up, but they went to a fire department to, they said, see what happened? These firemen like went from eating a terrible diet to a vegetarian diet, and they lost the combined, remember when they gave all the data at the end, 50 pounds in X, Y, and Z. And it was like, I was like, oh my God, like, what would have, they should have went back in and been like, we're going to give them a diet of organic, grass-fed, you know, whatever, like, yeah, proteins and slow-burning carbohydrates and veggies and fruits, and like, would they have seen even more progress? Like, that's what they didn't do. They removed the Doritos and the beer, and they threw in bean patties, and they said, well, this is why it happened. Okay, you removed the Doritos and beer. What would have happened if you ate the way that you and I eat? Like, I would have, my assumption would have been that they probably would have seen even better results. Yet, I can't tell you how many people that I work with are vegetarian. My daughter's a pescatarian, that are carnivore. I never really talk people out of these things.
Right.
I say, well, why are you doing it? I want to understand. They give me their reason. I'm like, you sure you want to do it? They're like, well, what's your viewpoint on nutrition? I said, well, this is what I typically recommend, but if this is something you really feel like committing to, let me help you do this in the best way possible. So I don't even like try talking them out of it. The times I start talking them out of it is when they turn to me and they're like, I feel terrible. My energy level has dropped. Look at my skin. There's things that are going wrong with it. Why? And then we try and do a deep dive in to figure out why. And even most of the time, I'm not even the one that can give them those answers because we're going for blood. So I'm turning to like a Dr. Gabrielle Lyon or a Dr. Dwayne Jackson. And we're doing a really, you know, a much deeper internal dive into their life to understand. I'm not just going to say, well, it's because you're not eating meat. There might be a problem that's way worse than that, right? So, you know, I try not to jump to the conclusion there. But I think it's understanding, you know, why people are doing things is very important.
I'm interviewing Dwayne Thursday. Man, he spoke so highly of you when I talked to him. Yeah, he's so highly. He's a good dude, man. I'm looking forward to that one. So I just wanted to bring that up to you.
Thank you. Tell him Don said he loves it. Don said he loves you. That's what he said.
I will. You know what you were talking about? You know what I noticed is that you never see, like in these documentaries and things, you never hear two things. You never hear them talking about blood panels. And you never hear them talking about sustainability. You know,
yeah.
And it's frustrating because those are the two most important things is how does your blood panel look? Because something might work initially, but your blood panel might be thrown off. And how sustainable is this to do long term? Because if it's not sustainable and you literally fall off the wagon, a lot of people end up gaining more weight back or hurting themselves in the process of doing this. And it's very frustrating, man. It really is.
I agree with you. And I'm laughing right now because I'm looking, my phone just buzzed and it says Dr. Dwayne Jackson on it. What are the chances? Is that crazy? But yeah, I totally agree with you on that. Sustainability is a huge part. It's even with program design too. It's like not understanding the client, not understanding, you know, how are they going to respond to this program? Why are you giving them a program that's 90 minutes when you know their attention doesn't go past 20 minutes? You know, it's, again, that's coaching. Designed for the greatest 19-minute program on the planet. Let them do that. Let them feel good about that. Build progress. Build consistency. It's very easy to see. People are going to say, what are you talking about? It's so easy to keep motivation high when someone's seeing progress.
Yeah,
that's what most people aren't realizing. If you're unmotivated or you feel like you're not disciplined to do this stuff, you probably would be a lot more motivated and a lot more disciplined if you saw a good return on your investment.
Of course,
right? And it's like, and that's the problem. It's like, well, when someone is actually turning around, going, oh my god, my body fat's improving. Oh my god, I'm getting stronger. Oh my god, my sleep is improving. They're not going to turn around and want to go out and bury their head in a pizza and in a keg of beer. They're going to want to build on that. And that's what a good coach helps them do, as you know.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you on that. So, you know, when we were talking about, you know, one of the things, honestly, like, and I know I'm getting older, but I look forward to like Sundays with my wife going to Whole Foods and picking up new things and testing out new things and spending time over at like the fish counter, you know, and learning about new things. But I have a question in terms of like protein intake. So I was interviewing JJ Virgin a couple of days ago. And one of the things we were talking about was she gets all of these people that will say, oh, I just don't know how to get that X amount of protein in. And my point and her point are the same thing. Like I told you, so I have a half a pound of bison and I have normally 12 to 14 ounces of either sea bass or salmon every day. I mean, boom, right there, I'm looking at 100 some grams of protein, just like this.
Yeah.
And so what do you find that you get that question a lot? And do you kind of explain to people it's not that difficult to get the protein in if you're looking at the right sources? Or how do you feel about that? Do you feel
So there's two different approaches, really. Like I was listening to Paul Check the other day, who, you know, I've learned from Paul for the last, you know, probably 25 plus years. He's the one who kind of introduced, I've never met him in person, but he's the one who introduced to me like biodynamic and organic farming. And I remember, you know, he was teaching courses on how the tractor opposed to the horse's hoof, right? And how it's not going to denature the soil. And I was learning about soil quality from him, you know, back in 2000. I mean, the guy was so far ahead of his time, but he was talking the other day about how, you know, tracking's, you know, not good and the tracking's, you know, well, you should be able to eat. Yeah, I get it. Like you're Paul or Dylan, you could do that, or maybe I could do that. But I do believe that tracking removes a lot of the guesswork.
Yeah.
Right. And with protein, I've stole this line from my buddy, Dr. Pat Davidson. It's just math.
Right.
It's just math. It's like, if you know you got to get 200 grams of protein in a day, and I'm making this number up for math purposes.
Sure.
You're a 200-pound person, and you have to get 200 grams of protein a day. It's just math. Well, how many meals are you doing? Four meals? Well, that's 50 grams a meal, right? Four times 50 is 200. Five meals? Well, it's 40 grams a meal. It's just math. Three meals? Well, you're going to have to bump up that protein consumption. Intermittent fasting, and you're someone that gets 2 to 3 meals in a day? Well, your window of opportunity to consume nutrition, those bookends have really come in. And you don't have that much time, but you better make sure that you get the nutrition that you're getting. Because if you do IF, right, and you don't start eating till 12, 1 o'clock, and you're going to bed at 9 o'clock at night, how many opportunities do you have to turn around and get the nutrition and the fiber and the protein, the carbs that you need in there? And that's where I really believe that tracking can be beneficial. When I'm working with someone, I won't even bring up tracking if they're like, oh, well, never committed to this and let me dive into it. And I'm like, great, let's start here, right? And I'll just incorporate maybe one meal in. Or, oh, I haven't had breakfast in years. And I'm like, well, I'm not hungry. Well, have one egg and a piece of fruit. Well, that's not enough. I know it's not enough, but let's start working there, right? This is, you know, part of a process of kind of building someone back, you know, up to that point. So, I do believe sometimes when you're sitting here and you're scratching your head and you feel like you've been eating really well, and I eat great though, and I eat beautifully, but my body won't change. It's like, all right, can it be a training problem? Sure. It could be. Like maybe your training's complete garbage, and I never like saying that, but you know, maybe you're not walking enough. Maybe you're not moving enough. Maybe your sleep's terrible. You know, maybe you're going to the gym, checking your phone every 2 seconds and not actually approaching a set with some intention. Maybe one day your protein consumption is at 200 grams. Maybe another day is at 120. Maybe one day your fiber is at 15 grams. Maybe one day it's at the 38 grams minimum that I need to be at. When you have that much volatility and it's inconsistent, I think sometimes people have a very challenging time changing. But for someone who needs to get to 200 grams of protein a day, if you're getting in 80 grams of protein in a day, jumping up 120 overnight for someone like you would be easy. But for someone else on the street that's not used to that, maybe we have to slowly start tapering them into that. Maybe I would recommend, you know what, hit 100 for a few days or a week, and hit 120 for a week, and hit 140 for a week. And then out of nowhere, activity level, recovery, you're getting up out of bed, you're feeling better, you're feeling stronger, you're moving more weight. And all these things happen that really improve your motivation. And I think that's the right way to approach it.
It's tough because, you know, we do, and I'm not saying anything on people because I do this too. We're in kind of an instant gratification type of lifetime right now, and that's kind of what people want, but it just doesn't work that way, and it takes time. And I think it takes hearing like what you said to people is, look, you can do it, but you can't just go try to do it all at once. And it's hard to convey that. But I think the more we try to do that in a more rational way, like what you explained, what you said sounds very common sense about it's just math, but it's not. It's not. I never even broke it down that way. And it's so common sense to me, but it takes me here from somebody like you to go, well, shit, it's that simple to explain. I mean, it's basic.
But you're nailing it. That's the thing. It's also something that's become so habitual to you. It's just like, this is you waking up every day and going through your routine and getting your nutrition in. Like, you look forward to this because you also know the return you're receiving from it, right? It's like, all right, well, did I enjoy that pizza last night? Yeah, 100%. It was delicious. The place I get it from in town too, they make it with like sourdough bread. Like it's delicious. It's freaking delicious. They don't like fry any of their stuff. They use like avocado oil and beef tallow, but it's like delicious and light. So you can go have like a bit of a cheat meal. And the next day I wake up and I'm like baby, and I'm like, I feel great. And like, I'm not like no digestive issues. It's awesome. But these are things that like people, who the hell is going to know this?
Right.
Who the hell is going to know this? Like you're on overdrive right now, man. Like you're in incredible shape. You love this. you're a big dork about this stuff like I am. Like, we just love it. We can turn around and listen to people who know what they're talking about. We're like, you and I are so in common with that. Like, we get so geeked up. But most people out there aren't like that. So I think sometimes, you know, breaking it down in a simple way, and like, when I say it's just math, like, it's just math, but I'm full. Well, what did you get into that? I got in 100. You're telling me I need 200? Do me a favor. Spend 1 week at 100. But you said I had to be at 200. Spend 1 week at 100. Get right. Really good at 100. Because guess what? The 100 that you got today was probably last week, 101 day, 60 another day. And then after the 7 days, I'm like, how is this? I'm used to it now. Great. Let's bump it up. Let's get around 120.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, now I know what you're doing. And now it took us 5 weeks for us to get up to that point. I really think that slow, steady approach is the right way to do things.
I agree. And I'm a big data guy. And look, I mean, I'm well in tune and I couldn't be more in tune, but I still keep track of things daily. So every once in a while, I have a day where it's just so packed and I just like a meal or I miss maybe 100 calories or something. But I keep the data just so I can go back and see and remember. And like, I have a Lumen and I'm testing all the time, and I have a CGM. I'm monitoring my glucose. I'm a data guy, but I think not everybody's going to do that. But I think the more data you have and the more you keep, the more interested you'll get, because you'll take a look at it and then you'll learn, wow, that this really does make a difference. Because a lot of times, you know, like, for instance, like for me with supplements, people go, oh, it doesn't matter what time of day or whatever, but it does. It might not make a 1,000,000% difference, but if you want to maximize what you're doing, it really does make a difference. And I think that just slowly getting into it, you'll appreciate it more. You'll learn more. The more data that you really get, at least that's how I feel. I don't know.
That's what you're into, right? Like I actually worked for Lumen for at least 2 years, right?
Really?
I did a lot of work with them. Good product, right? You know, it's also one of those things where that was like my carb cycling solution, not for a bodybuilder, but for most people. Because Lumen it's a form of carb cycling, because it's going to adjust your carbs or your fats according to how much carbon dioxide you're breathing into this little chamber. So, again, but like some people would go buy it and I'd be like, but you don't want to track.
Right.
And they'd be like, oh, I have to track if I'm doing this. I'm like, well, yeah, like you have to, like, yeah, but they said you don't have to. I'm like, yeah, that's when you get really good at it. Then you don't have to. Like, once you start understanding like what your meal portion sizes should look like, and like, oh, I'm having a piece of salmon, this is around the size, or oh, it's telling me that I have a boost day, or I gotta have more fats. I could go in this direction. That's when you could start. That's when you get, you're like you or me, where you could start making those decisions. But for the newbie out there, like if you tell them we'll have more fat today, they're gonna be like, what the hell does that mean?
Right.
Like, what does 180 grams of fat mean today? Like, how much fat is that? You know how much fat that is? I'm 100% with you. But again, the data for you, which comes so easy, you know, finding a lot of people get overwhelmed.
I think, you know, and I think it would be something to ease into, like with a MyFitnessPal. So just something to just ease into it and learn it slowly. And some people need more consistency or coaching than others. But I just find that beyond being intriguing and interesting, it would just be helpful, you know, just to try that and just see so you can compare and contrast longer term. But
totally agree.
I want to talk to you. One of the things that you're well known for is being somebody sought after that's trained a lot of important or famous people, quote unquote. And so, obviously, that says a lot about the level that you're at, which I already know without you having any of that. And I think most people would know just on your credibility alone. Results, but you know, in terms of that, and we don't have to get into anything personal with it because I know that's kind of private, but you know, how did that, what struck that for you? Like, how did that for you?
Yeah. So my first club that I opened I went off, became a trainer in 99, worked at Equinox for a year, left there, opened my own training business, my own one-on-one training business, did really well as a young adult, made some good money, did my first fundraise. 2003, raised like $5 million to open my first club. Yeah, I had that for 15 years. My 15-year lease expired May 31st of 2020.
Wow.
We were told that we had to close March 16th, Monday, March 16th at 8 p.m. We were forced to close. I was already in the digital business, so we kind of rolled off into a company that I own now called Dino Brands. by the time we were allowed to reopen, which was September, I was re-signing the lease. I went to the landlord. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Like, I'm, you know, doing, you know, in my profession, what I do now, I would have to open many clubs to do what I do now. But there was so much risk in the brick and mortar space. Because when we were allowed to reopen, it's like, you could reopen at 33%. I'm like, my business doesn't work at 33%. No. It would cost me, my one gym, so I had two gyms, Drive 495 and Drive 443. Drive 495 cost me $2 million a year just to break even, just to like cover my overhead. My monthly nut, it was probably even a little more than that. My monthly nut was like $200K a month. Yeah. I had to do that before. Anything above that was profit. So the amount of, you know, the amount of business that I did in that place, the place was incredible. And, you know, to this day, I was able to pivot into something that I believe is so meaningful to me. Do I ever miss it? There's aspects of it that maybe I miss, but honestly, I was able to exit the way I wanted to exit. But to get to the answer of your question, that gym that I opened, that first one, was a golf fitness facility. Like, we worked with golfers. We did kinematic sequencing. We had a phlebotomist coming in doing blood work. We had nutritionists. We were doing this stuff in 2005. We had indoor golf simulators. I had a bar upstairs. I was hosting Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, all these companies. So, you know, we started this business off. So imagine being the first place to open like that in New York City that had indoor golf simulators.
That's amazing.
Every corporate entity was booking their events with us. So we had the gym during the day downstairs, and upstairs we had a bar, and we had three simulators upstairs, two simulators downstairs. It was 15,000 feet. So it was like, I had companies coming in. It was like, oh, boom. Like, we were killing it. And then I think 07, 08, when we had that financial crisis, I remember looking at my brother, my business partner, being like, holy shit, we're going to have a problem here. And we just had to do a complete restructuring of our business. I had to raise $1 million to keep the place open, but I didn't do it in a loan. I did it in prepaid. So I went to some pretty successful members and I said, I need 100 here, 50 here. They're like, how are you going to pay it back? I'm like, I'm going to train it off. So like, if you're coming in with 100 grand, I'll train it off.
Nice.
So I worked off $1 million in a roughly 18 months of training. That's how much I had to train. So I was getting up at 3 a.m., opening at the club at 3:45, taking my client Rick at 3:45. And that's when I would start. So like, I did this once the 18 months were up. I mean, I probably end up, I've trained over 40,000 hour sessions in my life. I mean, I'm a machine with that stuff. So, but in that time where we had to restructure, I had an actor walk into my club named Hugh Jackman, and he came in with his trainer at the time, Rico Wesley. Rico, who I saw recently, is doing great. But Rico's the reason why I got Hugh. So Rico ended up having triplets and had to move. And Hugh saw me working out one day and kind of came to me and was like, you know, I want to work out with you. And I was looking at him like, train with Rico, get away from me. Like, you're like, it's almost like he was cheating on Rico. But no, I didn't realize that Rico and him were already knew that they were leaving. It wasn't that he was leaving Rico. Rico was leaving him. And he was like coming to me to be like, I'd like to work out with you. Finally, Rico came to me. He's like, you idiot. Like, he's once. So I'm leaving. I was like, Rico, I thought he was like, no, he goes, I love you. I appreciate you for that. And I worked with Hugh for almost a year to get him ready for a movie called Wolverine and Australia when he left. And at that time, that was, I can tell you right now, my daughter's going to be 18 in April. He asked me to go to Australia with him that summer. And I couldn't because my daughter Amelia was being born. August 11th. So that's, looking at now, that was like 18 years ago from right now. I was working with him, right? At this exact time. And that's how I got my feet into that space. I have a performance background through all the strength and conditioning. I'm a strength coach. But I also, my best friend who passed away in 2010 was a bodybuilding coach, right? He passed away. I claimed his body because he didn't have family. So when I sent him in for an autopsy, I had his body was in the morgue for 2 weeks. I had to go down to City Hall to claim his body. Otherwise, they were going to bury him in Plotter's Field. So Tommy's testosterone was north of 3,000. So I saw him struggling to get off certain drugs that he was on. I'm not talking about testosterone. I'm talking about other things. And this guy was like an Adonis. He was 10 years older than me. So I lived in the bodybuilding world, but I lived in the performance world. And I kind of created this term in my head called performance physique. So when I worked with Hugh, we did all the mobility. We did all the performance stuff. But at the end of the day, he had to be resilient. He had to turn and take his shirt off and look a certain way.
Right.
So I really, that kind of became my niche. And then out of nowhere, there was no social media back then. But I remember Hugh turned to me and he wanted to do some press for me. And I turned to him and I said, no. And he looked at me, he's like, why? I'm like, we got a job. And I was so against exposing any of those clients. I was I would go too far from it. Like, I probably should have done some press, to be honest. Like, I should have been like, Hugh, it's going to benefit us both. But I was like, no, I'm not doing it. And we didn't do it. And I think word got around that I had that approach. The next thing you know, like, you walk in there any given day. I've never seen a place in my life. This is like, you walk in, like, Sandra Bullock's on the treadmill. Owen Wilson's over here. The Rock Dwayne Johnson walking through the club. Then he introduced me to, I started working with Scarlett Johansson. I met Ryan Reynolds, and then it kind of all, it all just steamrolled from there. And that's really, so then what ended up happening was I'd have these actors literally on a weekly come in and just say, I got to get ready for this. And we would go into my office and I'd say, well, what does that mean? What do you have to look like? And we would Google, like, Lee F. Schreiber came in once and he was like, I got to look like I'm training for this role, Chuck Wepner. And I got to train to look like this. It was like Rocky, but before it was Rocky. That was what Chuck, boxer. But like, Lee F. was too ripped, so we had to soften him up. But how do you do that without? So out of nowhere, this became this like factory, this like experiment lab for me to be able to go in and get people ready to wear like prosthetic suits, like Hellboy, like Dave Harbour. We got him in this prosthetic suit. We do all this measurements beforehand. He weighed 250 pounds. Production company calls me in 5 weeks. We're going to pull the budget. Why? He's losing too much weight. I'm like, he was 249 pounds this morning. He lost 1 pound. They're like, he's not fitting properly in his prosthetic suit. He's just getting in too good a shape. I'm like, all right, just bear with me. And I'm calling Dave up like, hey, man, I'll go for ice cream tonight. He's like, what? What are you talking about? I'm serious. Like, you've been craving ice cream? I want you to eat it tonight. I want you to eat it tomorrow. But stick with everything else. And literally, like, those are the conversations that I'm having with people. So that's how my career really kicked off. I'm fortunate to where I'll get calls from people. And like, I've been working with Matt Bomer for a while. I haven't met Matt in person. I've probably been working with Matt at this point now for two and a half years. We haven't like met in person yet. We still laugh about it. He was on the phone with my daughter recently, helping her out with like college decisions because she's going to go get a degree, Bachelor of Fine Arts. One of the greatest, one of the nicest human beings, Matt, I've ever met. But like,
Matt Collar, love that.
Yeah, but I think I haven't met Matt yet. Like, Matt's going to walk in here and I'm going to literally attack him and, throw him down the staircase because I'm like, I feel like this connection with this guy. We talk, but, it's just, that's where our world's gone. So, so many blessings. But again, when you talk about being able to predict where your career goes and what you're doing, this stuff didn't exist back then, but I'm loving it, man.
It's just a testament to the trust that you have, because those, not that everyday people don't trust you, because they do for sure, but when somebody, that's their livelihood, is putting that into your hands.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to be gratifying to you, not so much that it's a celebrity, but just the trust that's being put into you, I think, more than
anything. I'll tell you what helps a lot. The fact that it's almost, it's always a referral.
Yeah.
Right? Like it really is. Like, when I had a brick and mortar facility, it was always a referral. So when they would come in, they would get stories about me. I'd get stories about him. And I remember meeting Jake Gyllenhaal. I trained him for a while and we just looked at each other. We just started laughing. And we just came over. We just gave each other a hug. And then the next thing you know, we're training. So I think sometimes it starts as easy as that. Again, you got to remember that what they do for a living is not fitness. It's not training. It's being great at their craft. And I give them more credit than most people give them, because imagine every time you go into a job, you have to completely recreate yourself. Like, you're working in computers and then suddenly they're turning around to you and saying, nope, you got to be a trainer this month. Next month. Right. Nope, you got to be a garbage man this month. Nope. Next month, you've got to be a chef. That's literally what these people are doing. They have the ability to act, but they're turning around and you're training them to look a certain way. And they're doing, like, Blake Lively was you know, coming by my close, she had to do all this gunfighting in her, in one of her movies. And I'm like, what? Like, and she brought her coach by, her stunt coordinator, and they're working on stuff. And I'm sitting there watching, and you're just like, this is not what she signed up for, but this is part of, you know, her being believable and moving into the role.
Dude, I'm not going to ask you anything about any of these people, but one thing is Ryan Reynolds, because I love his humor. Like, the way, is he really that funny in person, the way that he comes across, like that dry, sarcastic humor?
Ryan's one of the funniest, like, sometimes, I mean, he never comes after me verbally, because one time I joked around and he started to, and I ran into the corner and I just ducked, like he was hitting me with something. He just started hysterically laughing, but listen, these people, their normal lives, life's not a comedy, right? Like, he's not turning around telling jokes every second. He's got a family, a wife, he's got successful businesses, and he'll be there, he's serious, and he's going through stuff, and then out of nowhere, he says something, and I'm like, did you just start laughing?
That was too natural in his movies. That's why I thought, man, he's got to be like that a little bit in person, because
he's been probably my longest standing person that I've worked with, and I'm so grateful for what him and his wife have done in my career. And they're the most wonderful, beautiful, thoughtful people that I've ever met. And they, I can't even begin to tell you the things they do behind closed doors for people that they're not expecting social posts for. They have a beautiful family. They take care of their team, their staff. They have a tight nucleus. I cannot begin to tell you how incredible they are, and how grateful I am to be working with them, and just incredible human beings.
Well, that is so cool. It's comforting to hear that too, because, you know, people think and assume things. And so it's really nice to hear that. And then coming from you, I take that wholeheartedly. So
I know we don't have a lot of time. They are incredible human beings. Blake has been one of the biggest support systems in my life, besides my mom, my sisters, and my wife.
Really?
When she knew she knew there was uncertainty in my gym, she was on FaceTime calls with me, going through marketing ideas for posts just to keep it interesting. They built half my following for me. They have done intros. They have supported me and my family. She's baked for me. She's cooked for my kids. Beautiful people, incredible human beings. I can't even begin to tell you how much I absolutely love them. And, you know, unfortunately out there, when there's negative press and there's other actors involved, you have to understand and realize that those people, they're actors. And when you know someone's character and you trust in someone's character, you know the real story. But when someone else is turning around and they're saying things, they're actors.
Right.
They're acting. Right. All right. It's very difficult to turn around and see people that you love, be put in a false and negative light. And it's especially when none of it's true. But I could tell you right now, I've been training people for 26 years. I'm still with these people for 16 years. I would get on a plane right now and fly to China for both of them if they said they needed something. That is how incredible they are. That is how amazing they are. And I hope everyone listening to this right now understands that that I'm saying this about as genuine as I can say.
That's awesome. Dude, I got to tell you, man, I know that we got to go. I could talk to you for several more hours
on this. Let's do it again sometime. This is fun, man.
I was just going to bring that up if you can. Because
Well, if you're down for it, when you're ready down the road, dude, man, you and I got to train and we got to hang. So why don't we... we'll set up a part two sometime at your convenience I'm grateful that you're, you know, featuring me on your platform, and you're amazing, by the way. Congratulations on everything. And just let me know. We'll jump on a part two. It's easy.
I think we should do a part two at your gym when I can come out there and train with you. And that would be
Tell me what.
Yeah.
Easy.
Where are you in New York? Is that where you're at?
I'm in Long Island. So I'm an hour outside the city. If you come into the city, it's a train ride out here. I'll pick you up. I'll feed you. We'll train. We can sauna, do all that stuff. It'll be a blast. Let me know.
That's what we're going to do then, is we'll film that whole thing like that. And man, that would be so awesome. I would be so grateful for that. So, all right. So real quick, what's I'll link all this in the description for you too. What's the best ways to follow you or sign up with you or learn about you?
I'm greatly appreciated. Thank you. Don Saladino is my Instagram. You can check out my website, DonSaladino.com. Right? Yeah. And that's it. I offer free programs on there. So if anyone wants to come in and try stuff out, please. I never like to push anything on anyone. But again, grateful for you. Thank you. Best of luck. And let me know when you want to do when you want to come on out and let me host you.
It's a guarantee. And dude, I knew we had a lot in common, but I can't believe just how much. So I'm fucking stoked, man.
I didn't even want to get into like some of the prayer stuff. Like when you said that, I'm like, here we go. There's more and more stuff that I typically keep very to myself because I don't like to, you know,
we'll
that's more
privately.
Can get into it privately. That's very important. I'm the head usher at my church. So, you know, it's just, there's certain things that I think got faith and I hold it really close to me and being around good people. So you and I'll be friends for a while. I'm not worried about this.
Guarantee it, man. Guarantee it. Well, once again, dude, thank you so much. This has been so awesome. It made my month, really.
Thank you. Right back at you.
Awesome. So, all right, everybody. Well, that wraps up another one. I hope you enjoy this, which I'm sure you will. And stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Gemelli and Don Saladino signing off.